Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the topic today is the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. Yeah, okay. Democrats in Congress and the Biden administration are claiming this is a big victory, right? A total of $740 billion will be raised over the next decade. $300 billion of that is supposed to go to reduce the deficit. So we're really talking about, you know, a bill that's about $430 billion in so-called spending. Before I get to talking about what's really in this bill, what I think we need to do is put it in historical context. What do I mean by that? Well, first of all, let's look at the spending by Congress in the past year and then go back to the spending that began with COVID. COVID, of course, you know, really hit the economy and society in late February 2020. And by March, it was clear we had a shutdown. And by April, May, we had tens of millions of people out of work. Throughout the year of 2020, it's estimated that somewhere around 35 million people, workers in the U.S., experienced unemployment, either throughout the year or for part of that year. Big impact to the economy, shut it down. GDP dropped initially 15% or so, which is massive. And the government came out with a program called the CARES Act in March, April. And it's disputable how much was authorized to be spent. Not all of it was spent. For example, $650 billion was allocated, to large corporations, subsidy large corporations in the form of, you know, tax cuts and so forth, which the large corporations did not take up because there were strings attached to it by the government, and they didn't want the strings, and they did not need the money. They were flush with cash. They knew this was coming months before. The big corporations drew down their loans that they had on potential with the banks, hundreds of billions of dollars. They issued hundreds of billions of dollars of new corporate bonds. They reduced their operating costs when they shut down. They were sitting, you know, on $1 trillion of cash. And then the Federal Reserve, of course, said you can borrow from banks here at zero interest, virtually, nominally, in real terms, less than zero, negative interest. So the big corporations never experienced a hiccup with COVID in terms of their cash flow and their balance sheet and whatever. They did quite well, and so did the banks. The banks were pre-bailed out, first time in our history that the Federal Reserve pre-bailed out the banks, gave the banks, as it turned out over the next 18 months, $5 trillion of free money, $5 trillion, you know, to loan out. So they got bailed out, even though they didn't need to be bailed out. Unlike 2008-09, when they needed to be bailed out, and they were given $4 trillion then. Well, they were given even more this time around from the Fed, and they didn't need it this time. I mean, people don't realize that, but that's an amazing historical event, pre-bailing out the banks, the trillions of dollars. On top of that, Congress spending $2-3 trillion, you know, in fiscal spending when COVID hit in the form of the CARES Act. But not all of that, as I said, the CARES Act, actually got distributed. There was another $525 billion, I think, for small businesses that really needed it, unlike big businesses, really needed the bailout. But the medium and large businesses scammed that and claimed almost $100 billion of that for themselves, some of that they had to give back because they weren't really eligible for it. Small businesses got the loans, which turned into grants. In other words, they didn't have to pay them back $500 billion. As it turned out, they would need another $600 billion to bail out the small businesses, which they did subsequently later in the year 2020. So the CARES Act also provided those checks. Remember those initial checks that everyone got, $2,000 checks? It expanded unemployment benefits. People got extra unemployment benefits. About 10 million independent free contractors, freelancers, gig workers who previously were not eligible for unemployment benefits were eligible for the first time through expanded unemployment benefits. This is all in 2020. So you got about maybe $2 trillion at most of spending through the CARES Act, which was, really bailed out small businesses and unemployed workers and other programs for rent assistance and so forth. And student loans were put into forbearance. You didn't have to pay principal and interest. So the CARES Act, was socially sensitive spending, especially for small businesses and for workers. But at the time of the passing of the CARES Act, it was acknowledged, even by Nancy Pelosi, that this was only a down payment, that in order to keep the economy really going, what they would have to do was come up with a follow-on program. And they had plans for doing that in the summer of 2020. And the House even proposed that legislation. But Mitch McConnell, who had control of the Senate at the time, blocked it. And then even though they made believe they were negotiating, they had no intention of coming to an agreement with the follow-on bill. I forgot what the follow-on bill was called at the moment. It slips my mind. And then in August, I'm giving you a little history here. In August, the Trump administration jumped in. And while it was negotiating with the Democrats, in bad faith, jumped in and threw up its own follow-on bill that included such nonsense like, cutting the payroll tax for businesses and then doing some other things, a few token things, two or three token measures. But, of course, that didn't go anywhere. And then by the end of 2020, the economy and unemployment began rising rapidly again. And the unemployment benefits were running out, and people needed checks again. And they passed at the end of the year what was called the Cash Act, $800 billion more to give people emergency extension. At the time, we had all that crisis going on, too, about the government and the election, and it looked like political crises and constitutional crises were about to occur in December of 2020. So at the end of the year, they passed that Cash Act, which extended the benefit payments, unemployment benefit payments, for, several more months, and gave everybody another cash check infusion. And that kept the economy from collapsing into a recession again in the first quarter of 2020, while Biden was getting his act together. And Biden, of course, and Congress passed the COVID relief bill with a lot of spending for COVID. Just like the CARES Act, and the Cash Act, there was spending, for the vaccines and PPE, personal protective equipment, and so forth, was continued under the COVID Relief Act of, I think it was February or early March of this, of 2021. Okay. When Biden first came into office, that was his proposal. Right? Under Trump, we got the CARES Act and the Cash Act. Then we got the COVID Relief Act, which continued some of the supports, spending supports for households and the unemployment benefits and, you know, token rent relief and so forth. How much was that? You know, that varied between $1 and $1.5 trillion actual spending. So, you know, you got about maybe $4 trillion in actual spending under these three actual, you know, stimulus bills. These were fiscal stimulus bills. And forget about the banks and the Federal Reserve, you know. They don't get bailed out by Congress, and these bills, they get bailed out by the Fed. Right? They don't have to pay anything. They get paid out by the Fed. That's why the Fed was created, you know, to have this esoteric thing that people didn't understand called the central bank to bail out the big bankers whenever they got in trouble, which periodically they always did, right? And to control the currency and, you know, a few other things. That's what central bankers do, central banks. But their main role is to bail out the banks. And, of course, in 2020, they pre-bailed out the banks, as I said, right? Okay, so, you know, that brings us up to the summer of last year, 2021, where once again, the debate in Congress centered around, well, what follow-on stimulus bill to the COVID Relief Act are we going to pass? Because you got to understand, the CARES Act in 2020 and the COVID Relief Act in 2021 were mitigation bills. In other words, to put a floor under the collapse that was occurring that spring of 2020 because of the shutdowns, right? And that was occurring once again by late winter 2021, and we were slipping into a recession, double dip again in that first quarter when Biden comes to power. Okay, you know, those were mitigation bills, and each of them needed a follow-on stimulus. The follow-on stimulus did not occur in the summer of 2020, and of course, that led to the, by the end of the year, the economy slipping, you know, into recession again, and that Emergency Cash Act being passed. Well, the same thing happened last summer. You know, the COVID relief bill extended the CARES Act in some provisions for another 6 months. By the end of August, a year ago, the supplemental unemployment benefits expired. The checks, which were paid in February, March, which were less than promised, you know, those were spent. The rent assistance was discontinued. What was continued, or what went into effect as part of the COVID relief, was in July of 2021, we got the child care credit, which was a good program. But you got to understand, those child care credits that were implemented for 6 months only, starting in July, about half of those credits were just moving forward the annual child care tax cut households would have gotten in April of this year. And I was moving it forward in time into July of 2021 instead of getting it in April of 2022. Right? So, yeah, but, you know, there was some extra money there too as well. That was very positive. But that was only for 6 months. And that was allowed to expire at the end of the year. So you got, in September, the supplemental unemployment expiring. You got the rental assistance expiring. You got child care credit expiring by the end of the year of last year. That was all, you know, the aftermath of the COVID relief bill, which was originally passed in February 2021 under Biden, right? So the economy, with that pulling out all that those spending programs, right, also began to weaken once again as we entered into 2022. But what they did, meaning the Biden administration and the politicians, was to open up the economy instead of providing more subsidy spending and stimulus, just open the economy. And the hope was, well, we open the economy, we're going to get some growth out of this thing, and we won't have to do that spending, you see. They had tried to open the economy back in the summer of 2020, and they got a little bit of growth. But as I said, there was no follow-on stimulus bill, and the economy began to fall back that fall of 2020, and they had to pass the Cash Act as an emergency. Okay, so the economy this time actually began to open up in summer of 2021, which was a good thing in some ways. And, of course, it boosted GDP, and some jobs started coming back and so forth. But the problem was, it started generating, once the economy opened up, it became clear that global supply chains were in terrible shape coming out of the COVID shutdown period, not just in the U.S., but, you know, elsewhere in the world as well. And shortages began to appear, supply shortages, in August, September of last year. Shortages, in most kind of goods and so forth. And problems of supply chains, global supply chains, and problems of not being able to hire workers in key industries in the U.S. Remember, they talked about the Great Resignation. I wrote a piece called The Great Strike of 2021. Last fall, which is sort of slowly dissipated over the months in the past year, but couldn't find workers for the warehouses, for transport, for trucking, and railroads and the ports and so forth. We had a big problem of being able to move goods, apart from the problem of shipping and getting these goods and broken supply chains from around the world. That all set off intensified inflation, supply-side inflation, global supply chains, domestic supply chains-driven supply-side inflation. The opening of the economy last summer did add some demand-side pressure to inflation, more people and more wage income. But if you look at the CPI numbers, that inflation was pretty stable for 3 or 4 months last summer, 2021, as a result of opening the economy. The inflation was like 4.5%, 5, and it was stable. It was not rising. So demand, contributed about 4%. I would say rising demand last summer as the economy opened to the inflation, about 4.5%, maybe, right? But it was stable. It accelerated once the supply chain, supply side problems became apparent in late August, September, October of last year. We got a supply side boost added on top of the demand side, and that drove prices up at least another 4 or 5%. So if you look at the inflation we've had, it's about half of it is demand side, half of it is supply side, as we finished last year. Now, as we finished last year, Democratic Party forces on the left said, hey, we need a follow-on stimulus bill here. Inflation is eating up people's real income, we need some further stimulus, just like they said in the summer of 2020, right? And once again, in the fall of 2021, neither of those follow-on stimulus bills actually occurred, right? So it was still you know, we need, you know, I'm talking about Bernie Sanders and the so-called squad in the House, you know, that progressive so-called left wing, whatever, in the Democratic Party, the itty-bitty thing called the left wing in the Democratic Party, which is dominating control by corporate interests. You know, if you don't believe me, ask Joe Manchin. Anyway, at the end of the year, Bernie and others are saying we still need, for the third time, he was saying we still need a stimulus. And that's when the so-called Build Back Better bill was created in the fall of 2021, and it had those measures in it, you know, like free public education, negotiate prescription drugs, Medicare, you know, of all prescription drugs, other measures, you know, social spending measures were part of Build Back Better, health measures, education measures, rent measures, rent assistance subsidies measures. That was Build Back Better. That was what was left of all this follow-on fiscal stimulus bills that didn't occur. Okay. And at the same time, some of the original measures for in 2020 for stimulating energy, right? Spending, climate spending, stimulating other industry investment, you know, that was part of the COVID Relief Act, but was pulled out of the COVID Relief Act in early 2021, created as a separate bill. The infrastructure provisions in the original COVID relief were pulled out and created as a second bill, and that called the infrastructure bill. And that was, moving its way through Congress. So by the fall of last year, we had these two bills. One was the social spending programs, the Sanders provisions, and so forth, that hadn't been implemented, and the breakout called the infrastructure spending bill. Two bills. And Biden got, and Schumer and Pelosi got, Sanders and the squad to agree to break the two bills out last summer on the promise by Pelosi, Schumer, and Biden that they would all only insist on voting up both bills at the same time. Because you see, if you pass the infrastructure bill first, which corporations wanted and liked, right? A lot of subsidy in the infrastructure bill. That was worth maybe infrastructure bill, maybe $500 billion in new infrastructure spending. They said it was about $1 trillion, but $600 billion of that was already authorized in other transport spending. They always pump these bills up to make them look bigger than they are. And include stuff they already passed in them, right? So that's what they did. Infrastructure bill. Infrastructure bill had about $500 billion net new infrastructure spending. And of course, when you're talking about infrastructure, you're talking about building. So a lot of corporations get to participate in that infrastructure bill, and they like that. They wanted to just pass the infrastructure. Joe Manchin just wanted infrastructure passed. He didn't want the social programs, the Sanders provisions. Sanders and the left made a big strategic error when at the beginning of 2021, they allowed Biden to convince them to break out the two bills, into separate bills. The COVID relief bill was, immediate spending, on vaccines and so forth, and extending, new checks and extending unemployment benefits. The immediate stuff to prevent the economy from slipping into a recession in early 2021, a double dip, see. But there was leftovers from what Biden had campaigned for election. That was a big Christmas package for everybody. He was going to do everything there, not just COVID relief. He was going to do the infrastructure. He's going to do the climate change. He's going to do the education. He's going to do the Medicare. He was going to do rental relief and so forth. All the stuff that got packaged after COVID relief was spent, got packaged in those two bills, the Build Back Better social program spending and the infrastructure. And Sanders made a big strategic error in agreeing to split out the social programs from the infrastructure proposals. He got snookered by Biden and the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. He fell for it, and the squad, you know, in the House fell for it because of the promise by Pelosi that she would never allow the infrastructure bill vote separately first and then only the Build Back Better after that. Because if you broke them out, you didn't link those two votes, well, then once the corporate infrastructure bill was passed, you know, which you didn't read reconciliation, you know, it was passed with a majority. Some Republicans crossed over because it's, you know, pro-corporation passed that. But once that would pass, then there was no way leveraging, that pie for corporations, the infrastructure bill, to vote for the Build Back Better bill. All that came to a head last November when Pelosi, Schumer, and Biden reneged on their promise to Sanders and the progressives in the House and split out the bills. They quickly voted up infrastructure bill, and that was the nail in the coffin for Build Back Better. Dead. DOA. Dead on arrival. The progressives in the House, you know, the so-called progressives in the House, and the Sanders in the Senate got snookered and outmaneuvered again. They got outmaneuvered by Biden, the corporate wing, in the beginning of 2021, and then they got outmaneuvered at the end, and Build Back Better got shelved, and infrastructure bill passed, okay? Which brings us into 2022. What happens in 2022 is the war, Ukraine, the sanctions, and shortages of key industrial commodities and supplies. I'm not just talking about oil or even natural gas, but I'm talking about on top of that, industrial commodities like nickel, you know, and even grains, wheat and so forth, palladium, even aluminum and so forth, you know. With sanctions and the war, boom, those prices go through the roof, right? And that's when we had a second supply shock on top of the COVID-related supply chain shock of the fall of 2021. And that's why we got this double-digit inflation. Yes, it's double-digit, you know. The 8.5, 9.1 is a lowball estimate. I'm not going to get into that. I talked about that in previous shows, the anatomy of inflation here. And so we got even more supply-side inflation problems starting at the beginning of the year, and we've been experiencing that through the summer here. And by the way, that leads to the Federal Reserve being the main solution to inflation. The corporate wing of both parties agree that the only way to really bring that kind of a rapid inflation down is to engineer a recession, and that's what the Fed does, and that's what it is doing by these 75 basis points, 0.75% multiple rate hikes, which are already impacting the economy. We see it happening. And a 40% drop in new housing starts going on right now, and weakening of prices, you know, for homes, for demand as interest rates rise, and the same thing, you know, in other big ticket items that households might buy, as people pay, you know, $2 more for gasoline per gallon, you know, which is, as the economy is weakened and as China is weakening, that price is going down maybe half, $1 a gallon. We're still paying $1 a gallon more on average. You know, the Fed is the solution. The capitalists have decided the Fed is the solution to the inflation. And all this other talk about all these other little programs here and there, you know, get the Saudis to pump more oil, you know, we're going to release this petroleum strategic reserve. All that is just Republican consumption to make it look like the politicians, particularly Democrats, are doing something. That's not the solution, and they know it. The solution to inflation is to precipitate a recession, which is what they're doing. You know, in previous shows, I talked about we had politicians and economists. I think we had a blip here in our connection. I hope it's okay. I'm going to continue as if it was, and I'm sure the station will notify me if it isn't. Anyway, you know, we have the inflation that erupts here, worst supply side in the beginning of the year. About two-thirds of the inflation is supply side. About a third is demand as the economy slowly begins to continue to open. But that, and as the economy continues to slow because of the higher interest rates. The higher interest rates have a lag of 6 to 9 months. They began this past spring. We are approaching the six-month you know, threshold here, and it'll be 9 months by the end of the year. And as I've predicted, we will clearly be in a real recession here, not just a technical recession by the end of the year. Well, that's a little bit of a digression, you know, about the Fed and monetary policy. Getting back to the fiscal policy, what we are at this particular point was we don't have any, quote, social programs build back better at all. What we do have is the money that was going to be spent in the Sanders build back better this year, you know, if they didn't, you know, snooker him and pass infrastructure and you know, shelve build back better last November. That money would have been spent on Build Back Better this year. What we've had this year is that money is being redirected to three corporate spending bills. What are they? Well, infrastructure is one. Infrastructure bill, about, what, $500-600 billion net new spending going to infrastructure corporations for spending on infrastructure improvement, right? Secondly, just passed as well is the $280 billion semiconductor chip bill, which is another boondoggle to tech corporations and manufacturing R&D. It's really designed to get U.S. corporations that are in Asia to come back to the U.S. to relocate. In other words, we're going to give them the semiconductor part of that $280 billion, which is about $74 billion, a big boondoggle, the chip companies, you know, the Intels, the Qualcomms, and all those guys, right? Bring it all back, guys, because we're going to go to war with China eventually. We don't want our strategic semiconductor production over there in Asia. So bring it back. And then another $200 billion. To subsidize manufacturing companies because they want to bring them back too, not just the chip companies. So $280 billion has been passed here this summer in this semiconductor chip bill on top of the $500-600 billion infrastructure bill. That brings us close to $1 trillion going to corporations, right? And now it brings us to the Inflation Reduction Act, which is in that same mode. It's mostly, I say, because there are some provisions, social provisions, it's mostly subsidies, once again, to big corporations. Okay, so keep in mind, we got these three bills, Inflation Reduction Act, which is a misnomer. There's very little anything to do with inflation reduction. We've got the CHIP bill that's passed already. By the way, that was originally part of the Biden bill when he came into office. That, too, was broken out because they knew they could pass that quick, just as they knew they could pass the infrastructure bill. Both of those, infrastructure and CHIP bill, were broken out of the initial proposals that were supposed to be part of the COVID Relief Act, but they just went with the mitigation provisions of the COVID relief to avoid recession. So those two bills have continued down the road here, and now they're finally passed, infrastructure quickly, and now the semiconductor chip bill, which is $280 billion, $74 billion just to semiconductor companies, the rest of manufacturing. Notice that it's a big boondoggle for the tech companies, you know, who pay a lot of money in campaign contributions to the Democrats. So that's what we've got here. And now we've got the Inflation Reduction Act. Let's talk about that and what remains. That's the third leg of this shifting of the Build Back Better spending from social programs to corporations. Okay. First of all, you can ask some questions about it. Is it an inflation reduction bill? No, but it does provide some subsidies in the healthcare area to households, particularly elderly households on Medicare, to offset and mitigate inflation. It doesn't stop the price increases, but it subsidizes certain households. That's not an inflation reduction bill. Is it a climate energy bill? Yeah, there are some provisions in it. We'll go over them in more detail for investing in climate, global warming, climate change. Mm-hmm. But there's also provisions that kind of negate that spending, provisions that are subsidies to energy and oil companies that Mr. Manchin insisted on. And by the way, if you read this fine print, I haven't read it all, but fine print says you can't spend on climate investment mitigation until you pass and introduce these provisions that provide subsidies for the oil and energy companies. In other words, Manchin made sure that his buddies in the energy industry get theirs first before the rest of the climate reduction investments actually occur. Interesting. Okay. The hostage provisions. We call these Manchin's hostage provisions, and we can call this thing the Biden-Manchin bill. Come on, you know? Schumer, the Senate... the head of the Senate there for the Democrats, right? Schumer couldn't get anything done until, I believe, Manchin and Biden quietly met separately and agreed on these provisions here. Horse traded and agreed on these provisions. But yet, Schumer is trying to take credit for all of this. It was interesting. They had this clip on TV. It showed Biden sitting down writing or signing the bill, right? You got Schumer right over his shoulder clapping with this big smile on his face, as if he really did something. Then you got Joe Manchin right next to the right of Schumer. And what does Biden do? Biden's signing the bills here, and he takes his pen. And he doesn't give it to Schumer, who's, happy spending, clapping. He passes the pen that he used to sign this bill right past Schumer and gives it to Joe Manchin. And then Joe extends his hand to Biden and they both, shake hands. And the direct quote is that, "I had no doubt we would achieve this, Joe," is what Biden says verbatim to Joe Manchin. So this was a deal worked out directly by between Biden, the corporate pick, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party pick, and Joe Manchin, you know, the corporate front man running interference and blocking Build Back Better for almost 2 years for them. This was their deal, you know. I have no doubt, Joe, we could achieve this. Yeah. You know, these guys knew in the beginning where they were going with this thing. Okay, so will it generate jobs? Well, they say, you know, the spending generates a lot of alternative energy jobs. You know, I think we got maybe 700,000 alternative energy jobs created. How much is due directly to this legislation, and how much is due to the general growth of that industry? You can't separate out. I mean, a lot of these numbers about job creation, inflation, and so forth, tax revenue creation, are all just guesswork by government bureaucrats. Okay, will it boost GDP? Yeah, some, but not this year. Not this year, no. Neither will the infrastructure bill this year. Neither will the CHIP bill this year. So all this stimuli, these three corporate-leaning bills, legislations, is not going to do much, if anything, for jobs in this country right now. Right? Nor is it going to do anything for inflation. It's not an inflation reduction bill, as I said. So, you know, the politicians, you know, Democrats in particular, you know, in the Beltway and in Washington are really slapping each other on the back saying, oh, well, look at what we did. Oh, this is so great, you know. They think it's going to get them votes. Not many, in my view, because the condition for the average American household has not changed. That condition is the jobs being created are mostly part-time jobs, and inflation has not really abated very much. You know, maybe a dollar a gallon in gas, and that's about it. Food's still high, going through the roof. Rents are going through the roof. You know, the average American votes based upon his pocketbook, and boy, that pocketbook is not really improved very much, and it doesn't matter what the politicians pass that will take effect next year. And whether they think that's going to get them votes, I don't think it will. Okay. So what kind of spending do we have in this inflation reduction? Well, we got about $740 billion in alleged tax hikes from three measures. And $300 billion of that is supposed to go to deficit reduction over 10 years. And that leaves about $430 billion, maybe. $430 billion of the $740 billion. You know, you just take off the top, the $300 billion, it goes to the deficit. That's not spending of any kind. So you got about $400 billion. Let's talk about the tax measures. You know, they're saying they're going to raise the $740 billion by three measures, specifically, three measures. One is to restore the 15% minimum, alternative minimum tax, AMT, on corporations. You see, there's a 15%, there used to be a 15% AMT. You know, you can use all your loopholes you want, but you got to pay 15%. And there were two of them. One was on corporations and one was on individuals. Both of those were eliminated by Trump and his massive $4.5 trillion corporate investor tax cut in 2018. Both of those were eliminated. So we're supposed to return the 15% AMT on corporations, right? And how much is that going to raise? Well, it looks like, you know, roughly somewhere around $50 to $60 billion a year, they claim. Alternative minimum tax. I'll explain why I don't think it's going to be. And then secondly, there's a 1% tax on stock buybacks. And then there's the $80 billion more they're going to give to the IRS to hire people, and that's supposed to generate maybe $12 billion a year in additional tax revenues. So we got these three measures that's supposed to raise $740 billion. Will they? Will they? I don't think so. Why not? First of all, the $50, $60 billion from the alternative minimum tax on corporations being restored is on what they call booked income. In other words, it's what the corporations are willing to say is what's left over after we shuffle some of our profits and revenues into different cubby holes and safety holding boxes, you know, within a corporation. It's booked income. So there's going to be a lot of avoiding of recording of booked income. They're going to find ways to put some of this income in different cubby holes. Right. One thing. Second thing is there's no closing of loopholes of corporations moving their headquarters offshore and avoiding U.S. taxes through what's called the inversion loophole. There's no checking on that. Corporations will be inclined to do that more. Right. 15%. That assumes that most corporations are paying less than 15. Well, some of them are paying more than 15. Mostly they're around 15% already, you see. That's about the average of what corporations pay now. So having to pay a minimum of 15% really isn't going to affect them paying any more revenue anyway. That's the third point. And then there's other loopholes as well. I don't think they're going to generate $50, $60 billion a year from this restoring the 15% corporate AMT. It's just not going to happen. What about the 1% Build Back Better? Okay, well, not Build Back Better, excuse me, stock buybacks. How much is stock buybacks per year? Well, I've talked about this before. If you look at the trends since Obama here, stock buybacks and dividend payouts have been rising from about $800-900 billion a year under Obama in his first term to $1.2-1.3 trillion a year under Trump, and about 2/3 of that is stock buybacks, and the rest is dividend payouts by corporations. In other words, over $1 trillion, corporations have been paying their shareholders every year in stock buybacks and dividend payouts. In other words, just big money funnel going to shareholders, which in tech industry is mostly the founders, you see. So maybe 2/3, well, you know, say $700 billion. In stock buybacks on average, 1% means what? Of $700 billion? $7 billion a year. That's all. 1%, $7 billion a year on $700 billion in stock buybacks. Well, add that to the $50-60 billion. You've got about almost $70 billion. All right. Well, let's see. Let's say about $60 billion, right? And then the IRS auditing now and hiring all the IRS is supposed to generate $124 billion over 12 years. So let's say $12 billion more. So that gets you to your $740 billion. You see, over 10 years. So these three measures, both which have big holes in them. I mean, what happens if companies instead of giving their money in stock buybacks to the shareholders, decide to reduce the buybacks and raise the dividends? There's not 1% on dividends, it's just on stock buybacks. So the companies will move their money from buyback to dividend payouts. And that's how they'll reduce that revenue stream. And I've described how they'll reduce the corporate AMT stream. And I don't know, you know, this $12 billion a year assumption, what that's based upon, the IRS auditing and going after corporate tax cheats, or whether they'll go after the small guy, who knows. Anyway, the $740 billion is questionable in terms of revenue. What is the Inflation Reduction Act going to be spent on? Well, $370 billion of the $440 billion, whatever, is supposed to go to climate and energy investments. You know, they're going to continue the $7,500 tax credit you buy an electric car, right? They're going to continue some of the household solar panels, heat pumps, and so forth, tax credits. These are continuing. These aren't net new, right? And it's pretty clear that the $7,500 tax credit is really a boondoggle for Tesla and the auto companies because they just add it to their price, you see. The purchaser, the buyer, gets $7,500 credit, but he's going to pay $7,500 more for an electric car. Anyone who's bought one knows that they cost a hell of a lot more than a gas-driven car. So I don't see much change there in a positive sense. Now, the claim is, this $370 billion is going to reduce U.S. global emissions by 40% over 2005 levels. Well, what the media is not telling you is that existing measures were already reducing CO2 levels, emissions, by 24% to 33%. Over 2005, and that this new legislation is only going to, add another 7% to 9% on top of that. They, when they say 40%, they're talking about existing measures, and assuming that this new bill adds to the existing measures by 40%. It doesn't. It's only 7% to 9%. So you're not going to get a very big emissions reduction from this particular climate bill, $370 billion. And part of that $370 billion, by the way, is a $30 billion tax credit to corporations that produce panels and cars and so forth, right? So take off the top at least $30 billion in the production manufacturing tax credit here. In other words, boondoggle for corporations here. So that's the big measure there in the $430 billion, about $369, $370 billion is climate investment. And they're making a big deal about the climate investment provisions of this, but it's only going to reduce emissions another 7 to 9%. Not a big deal. And any of this spending, once again, on climate measures can only occur if the measures subsidizing oil and energy companies like open up new drilling and so forth occur first. Manchin made sure of that. Right? What are some of the other provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act? Well, there are some positives for Medicare households and Medicare consumers. Yeah. What are these? Well, insulin drug prices are set at $35 instead of current $250. In other words, the price for Medicare insulin users goes down. That's a positive thing, right? It's not inflation. It's a reduction. It's a subsidy. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the provision that would have provided $35 insulin for all diabetics that used insulin who weren't on Medicare has been dropped. That's a much larger group. Okay, well, that was dropped. That was pulled out, right? The ability, by the way, for Medicare to negotiate all drugs, right? That was reduced in this bill to only 10 drugs to begin with. It'll grow a little bit over the 10 years, right? Well, not even 10 years, because the ability of Medicare to negotiate drug prices occurs 3 years from now. It doesn't start right now. It only starts in 2025. Yeah. Okay. So you get insulin $35 cap on Medicare recipients now, but the negotiating drug prices by Medicare even does not occur for three more years. All right. Another measure is the extension of the ACA, the Obamacare government subsidies that were passed a few years ago, increased as prices continued to rise, for health care. The ACA subsidy is extended for three more years. So you've got three measures in health care in this bill here, extending the subsidy for 3 years, which I guess you could argue might discourage businesses from raising prices, but I don't think so. They'll raise them anyway. In any event, that's a measure. Medicare drug negotiations, that's a measure, positive, but not for three more years. And the insulin for Medicare only is positive, but leaves a lot of poor under 65 diabetic people dependent on Medicare, on insulin, continuing to pay $250. And you know what? If these companies, there's three companies only, I think, in the world that produce insulin, if these companies only get $35 a vial for all the Medicare recipients, don't you think they're going to raise the price on the rest of the people who aren't covered by the $35 limit? Yeah, they will. There's another provision that says Medicare recipients will get free vaccines, but what about the rest? There's a cap on drugs of $2,000 a year. Well, we had that cap already, you see, under Medicare and prescription drugs Part B. We had the government, provides up to $2,000, and then it was what was called the donut hole. After $2,000, maybe it was $2,500, then you have to pay the full price of your drugs until you get to $5,000, the hole, there's a hole, and after $5,000, then the government starts paying for it after that as well. So you had this thing called the donut hole between $2,500 and $5,000. Well, the donut hole's gone away, I guess. So that's a little bit of an improvement, but you're still going to spend the first $2,000 for drugs out of pocket. There are some medical provisions here that aren't too bad, but they're very token and they're very carefully constructed, mostly for older people, and only partially. The insulin thing is a real insult. And those, that's the major provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act. These subsidies, ACA subsidies and Medicare provisions and so forth, and tax credits, to households that already existed for, electric cars and so forth. And that's it. That's it. It's inflation reduction. It's corporate investment subsidies and investment in alternative energies, yes, but paid for by big subsidies first for the oil and energy companies. What other provisions are in this thing other than deficit reduction, energy, which I described, and a few token things for Medicare recipients? That's pretty much it. And the tax revenue claims, I think, are bogus, right? What's not in this, which was clearly dropped out, Senator Sinema made sure that carried interest tax was not re-implemented. That's, you know, private equity managers and so forth get to tax their profits, their income at a lower rate than the regular tax rate, right? That's tens of billions of dollars a year carried interest. Well, that's not there, right? The child care extension is not there. Paid leave is not there. Free two-year public education is not there. Rolling back other multiple measures of Trump's 2018 tax cuts, that's not there. And they're making a big hoopla deal about this. You know, first of all, it's not going to generate the revenue. Secondly, it's almost half of it goes to deficits. You know, $370 billion, a lot of that which goes to corporations. A few features for Medicare patients here and ACA, Obamacare subsidy extensions. That's it. Oh, this is not the Build Back Better bill. That's for damn sure. Right? It's a very token kind of a thing. I haven't been able to determine exactly what the subsidies, the Manchin subsidies for oil and energy actually are yet. I'll take a look at that, talk about that maybe next week, but it's really an oil and energy subsidy bill in some ways, you know, with some items there on continuing tax credits for alternative renewables and, you know, a little drib drab here for Medicare. But other than that, I mean, this bill has nothing to do with inflation. Not going to really stimulate the economy. It's mostly a boondoggle for energy corporations, alternative and traditional. Think of it, you know, the $370 billion, most of that, on top of the $280 billion chip semiconductor manufacturing boondoggle here. So well, you got like $350 on top of $280, so that's about $650 billion on top of the $500 billion infrastructure bill. So you got over $1 trillion this year in these three bills going to corporations and investors that should have gone in the Build Back Better bill to households and people who needed even more. You just stripped out Build Back Better, shelved it, and gave the money that should have been spent to corporations in these three bills. That's the important point of 2022. Three bills that the Democrats are really jumping up and down saying, hooray for us, right, are really going to corporations and investors once again instead of people. Well, that's what you get for a corporate-run Democratic Party. This is what you're going to get. And, unfortunately, Sanders and AOC and the squad, you know, don't understand this. Or maybe they do, and they're going along anyway, you know, grumbling because they want to keep their jobs, right? Anyway, okay, that's it. I don't know. I hope PRN got this. We were having some trouble here with the connection. But that's my analysis of the fiscal spending legislation of the last several years, capped with the Inflation Reduction Act just passed. Okay, I'm out of here.